Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Should I Work? Work from Home Options for Those on Social Security Disability conference call. Your host, Barbara McKeon, will now begin.
Thank you, Dawn. Good evening, everyone. My name is Barbara McKeon, and I'm the Director of Employment Programs and Services at the New York City Southern New York Chapter of the National MS Society. And I would like to welcome all of you to the fourth call in our 2013 Employment Teleconference Series. We would like to start off by thanking Robin Kemper for her sponsorship of this series. And joining me tonight as hosts on the call are Steve Nissen, Senior Director of Employment Programs with the National Capital Chapter in Washington, D.C., and Christina Forster, Employment Services Manager for the Greater Delaware Valley Chapter. Please know that this evening's call will be recorded and available to you at the end of the series. Tonight's topic, Should I Work? Work from Home Options for People on Social Security Disability, will try to address the question we get from a large number of people with MS. For those on Social Security, concerns about trying to work and possibly losing one's benefits, which may have been difficult to get initially, is huge. As our speakers will share with you tonight, there are many incentives out there and safety nets should this be something you want to try and do. So we hope that this evening's program and the resources that we will have shared will provide you with the information you need to help you when making this decision. After our speakers have completed their presentations, there will be time for your questions. So please jot down any questions you have during the call so you're prepared to ask them during the Q&A period. Be sure to ask your question completely, as we will be muting your line once your question is asked in order to allow us to get as many questions as possible. So we really don't want to get back and forth into a conversation. Unfortunately, there's just not a lot of time for that. At the end of the program, Steve, Christina, and I will give you our contact information. So if you have any additional questions or unanswered questions, you can forward them to us, and we'll do our best to get them answered for you. And at the conclusion of tonight's call, we will be polling the audience in an effort to evaluate this program. It's a short survey of only six questions, so if possible, please stay on the line until the conclusion of the program to answer all of the questions. And we really, really are interested in your feedback. So our first speaker tonight is Marilyn Morrison, Senior Work Incentives Counselor with the Virginia Association of Community Rehabilitation Services, also known as VA Access, where she provides benefit analysis and assistance for people considering entering the job market, currently working, or considering changing jobs and receiving SSI or SSDI. She works extensively with employment services organizations, community rehabilitation programs, local voc rehab offices, school districts, and many nonprofit groups assisting people with disabilities achieve their occupational objectives while utilizing their federal and state entitlements. Marilyn was certified by the Social Security Administration to provide services and certified as a work incentive specialist advocate by Virginia's Department of Rehab Services in 2007 and the Maryland Department of Rehab Services in 2011. So I'd like to welcome Marilyn.
Thank you very much for inviting me this evening. I have to shorten that. It's much too long. What I'm going to start with is the intention of this presentation is really to outline the basic rules for earning work income and receiving SSDI. At the end of this, you will not be an expert, but I want you to be aware that there are manageable incentives for you. There are work incentives. There are ways to manage your entitlements. What I've given you is a couple of handouts. One of them is a basic overview of Social Security Disability Insurance. The other is an overview of Supplemental Security Income, or SSI. I'm not really going to be touching on SSI, but it's a good reference point to just keep on hand. The other piece that I've given you is the 2013 Red Book, which is a excellent resource. I like it because it's published by Social Security. It explains the basic working rules in English, not in Social Security. If you have to go to a SSA office, this is a great resource to take with you. I've met with claims reps at Social Security offices who use this as their reference point instead of the regs or the program operating manuals, which most claims reps have access to. But I like it primarily because it really does clearly explain a lot of the benefits and work incentives. The disability rules that I'm going to be speaking about are federal rules. They don't change if you relocate to another state. However, there are some states that also provide a state supplement of additional funds, and you can always go to the SSA website for these states where those additional funds are available. But everything that I'll be speaking about are the federal rules. It doesn't matter where you live. The rules are the rules are the rules, as I like to say. The one thing that you have to remember when you're talking about Social Security disability rules is that you don't want to look for logic. There is no logic. When I first started my certification many, many years ago, I was sitting in a very big room with a lot of people that were training, and there were Social Security people, and I'm one of those people that needs to know logic. I need to know why the rule is the rule. So my hand kept going up, and I kept asking, why is the rule like this? Finally, a very nice woman who was sitting next to me who was with Social Security leaned over, and she said, just don't look for logic. The rule is the rule is the rule. And that really has become my mantra through all of this, is it never look for logic because it's just not there. The rules are the rules are the rules. When you're speaking with Social Security, if you need to call the 1-800 number, if you have a question to ask them, make sure that you're clear what benefits you're receiving. Don't assume that when you call the 1-800 number that you have called that when you call the 1-800 number that they're looking at your records. They may not be. Do not call it Social Security. You're not receiving Social Security. When someone asks what benefits you're receiving, be clear that it's either SSI or SSDI, or in some cases you might be receiving both. If you simply say Social Security, you'll get retirement working rules, and those rules are very different than disability working rules. So you want to be really clear about that. In Social Security world, there's no such thing as being completely disabled or a percentage disabled. That's really more of a VA thing. You're not 10% disabled, 20% disabled. In Social Security world, you're either blind or you're not blind, you're disabled or you're not disabled. There is no percentage. There is a very specific definition of disability under Social Security rules. And let me give you just the basic definition, and that is the inability to engage in any substantial gainful activity because of a medically determinable physical or mental impairment that can be expected to result in death or that has lasted or that we can expect to last for a continuous period of not less than 12 months. In plain English, and not Social Security, basically what that means is as a person's ability to earn $1,040 without support. So when you hear the phrase substantial gainful activity, what that means is there's a number that is associated with that. And for 2013, that number is $1,040. It's always gross, and it's monthly. Now, if you're self-employed, if you're going to be working as a 1099 or a contractor, Social Security is going to look at net income, not gross. But when they're talking about substantial gainful activity, what they're looking at is $1,040. That number traditionally has gone up every year. So usually in October or November when there is a big announcement about how Social Security is going to be changing and there's going to be an increase based on the Consumer Price Index, all of the numbers will go up across the board. So not only will the basic retirement numbers go up, Social Security disability will increase, but also substantial gainful activity numbers. And then as we move forward, the trial work period number will also be going up as well, and we're going to be talking a little bit about that. I'm going to talk primarily about working rules for SSDI, not SSI. SSI is a completely different animal, and we really don't have time to get into that tonight. What we're going to be talking about primarily is Title II, which is known as Social Security Disability Insurance. Title II, or Social Security Disability Insurance, is basically a cash benefit that's paid by the individuals. It's basically the FICA that we've paid into the system. It's the cash benefit paid from individuals who have worked and paid into the Federal Insured Contribution Act, or FICA. It can be a disability that's diagnosed prior to the age of 22. In that case, a person is known as a childhood disability beneficiary. They still are on SSDI. It's just a different classification. And Medicare is directly associated with SSDI. Medicare is a federally funded medical insurance. There is a waiting period before that benefit begins. Normally, it's 24 months from the date of entitlement. So you want to be aware of that. There is no premium for Part A. There is a monthly premium for Part B, and there is a prescription drug plan for Part D. So you want to be aware of that as you're moving forward. As I talked about substantial gainful activity, or SGA, you're going to see that number a lot. You're going to see that word a lot. You might see it in any number of combinations. You might see it as gainful activity. You might see it as substantial activity. You're going to see it in a lot of different forms. But always remember there's a number that goes with that, and the number is $1,040 for disabled. Now, for the blind, there is a different number, but primarily we're going to work with that $1,040 number. There are a number of work incentives that are put in place within the Social Security Disability Insurance System. The work incentives actually encourage an individual to work and earn income. Social Security wants you to work. It's perfectly okay to work and still receive your SSDI. The first thing that a person comes up against when they begin to work is something called the trial work period. Social Security has put into place a number of protected windows. So the first one that you're going to come up against is called the trial work period. It gets a little confusing, so hopefully you can stay with me, and I know there might be some questions about this at the end. Basically, what the trial work period is 9 individual months. They are not consecutive. Social Security basically says that if you earn over $750 gross in that month, then you've used one of your trial work months. Nothing happens during this time. You could earn $1 million during this period of time when you're in your trial work month, and nothing will happen. But if you earn over $750, you've used one of your trial work months. If you don't earn, if you go back to work and say one month you earn $1,000, the next month you earn $500, of those 2 months, you've only used one of your trial work months. And you get 9 of these over a 60-month period. So it's not 9 months within a year. It's 9 months over a 60-month period. And I have a number of clients who use 2 months in 1 year and 2 months in another. I have a client who is a long-term client of mine who works as an accountant. Most months he works and he earns about $600 a month, but this time of year is tax season. So he's going to have about 2 months where he'll earn about $1,000 a month, and he's going to use 2 of his trial work months. Some years he uses 2, some years he uses 1, but he's never used all 9 because he's never used all 9 in that 60-month period. But if he were to use all 9, so let's suppose you return to work, you're earning about $1,500 a month, you work for your 9 months, you've now worked through your trial work period. nothing happens to your benefit, as I said. You're still going to get your benefit every month. Once you use your 9 trial work months, and you only get one trial work month, you only get one trial work period, I'm sorry, you then immediately go into what's called the extended period of eligibility. That's a 36-month consecutive time frame. So you have the 9 months that are not consecutive. You then go into a 36-month period. For any month in that 36-month period that you earn $1,040 gross or more a month, you're technically not eligible for your cash benefit. So you're technically not eligible for your SSDI. That's consecutive. So what that means is you're in that 36-month period whether you're working or not. So if you go back to work, you start earning $1,500 a month, you work through your trial work period, month number 10 comes along, and there's a health setback or there's an issue, you're still going to be in your 36-month extended period of eligibility. You're still going to get your cash benefit, and everything is fine. But that clock is still going to tick. You're still going to be in the 36 months, and those months are still going to tick by. So say another year goes by, and you then go back to work and start earning $1,500 again. You're now in 12 months of your 36-month extended period of eligibility. The first month that you earn your $1,500, you're technically not going to be eligible for your cash benefit. So the cash benefit can stop and start very easily during this time. If you earn over $1,040, you're technically not eligible for the cash benefit. If you earn under $1,040, you're still going to get your cash benefit without any issues. Your Medicare is just going to hum along as long as your premiums are paid during this time. Then your Medicare will stay with you. You can also, with Medicare, you can opt out of Part B if you have comparable insurance. So if you return to work and you have employer-sponsored insurance, you can, for a time, opt out with no penalty. You can opt out of your Part B. You can opt back in if anything happens and you need your Part B back again. You can also maintain two forms of insurance. You can have multiple insurances. What would happen is that your employer-sponsored insurance would be your primary. Medicare would be the secondary. And if there's Medicaid, if you're part of a state Medicaid program, the state Medicaid would be your third payee. So there is possible to have multiple health insurance in that case. So during the extended period of eligibility, there are a number of work incentives that Social Security has put in place. They understand that in order to work, people with disabilities might need additional supports. You might need case management. You might need job coaching. You might need durable goods. You might need specialized transportation or paratransit. There's a cost for that. So what Social Security has done is they put into place something called the impairment-related work expenses. What impairment-related work expenses are basically those items that you need that are out-of-pocket expenses that support the disability. So, for instance, any medical devices that you need to purchase, that you purchase directly, or there's a copay, maybe Medicare is going to pay a portion and you're going to pay a portion. That out-of-pocket expense, Social Security gives you credit for. If you're paying an attendant care, so if you're paying an attendant out-of-pocket to maybe help with dressing or even organizational skills, if you're paying for that out-of-pocket, Social Security gives credit for that, and it's almost like a tax deduction. So if you're earning $1,500 a month, but maybe your out-of-pocket expenses are $500 a month, you've got some medical devices, you've got attendant care, there are transportation expenses, Social Security is going to look at that as almost like a tax deduction. So if you're earning $1,500 and those out-of-pocket expenses are $500, Social Security will say, well, yeah, we know you're earning $1,500, but you have these added expenses. So we're going to say you're earning $1,000 a month, and you'll be able to keep your SSDI benefit for that month. So any month that you earn over SGA, you really want to take a look at those impairment-related work expenses as well. They will look at some residential modifications as well as an impairment-related work expense. So you want to keep track of those through receipts. You do want to report those to Social Security while you're working. Another work incentive that's available is called subsidies and special conditions. This is one of my personal favorites. I really like this. I think it's underutilized. But these are the indirect supports that you might be receiving. So you might be receiving services from your state voc rehab. You might be getting job coaching or case management. You might be in a set-aside position on the job. Social Security assigns a cost for that. So they give a value to that. And they use that as a deduction as well. It's not out of pocket. It's not out of your pocket. But Social Security basically says, well, yeah, you're earning $1,500 a month, but the value of these services that you're receiving is $500. So we're going to say that without these services, you would be earning $1,000 a month, and you'll be able to maintain your Social Security disability cash benefit as well. Another way to look at it is there's something called an employer subsidy, and that's if you have a job that maybe there are 10 tasks to the job, 10 responsibilities to the job. But based on the disability, you're doing 7 of those tasks. Someone else is doing the other 3. You're getting paid as if you're doing all 10, but you're doing 7. Social Security will say, well, yes, we understand that you are getting paid at this amount, but we're going to say that you're earning 70% instead of the full 100. And that gives you some credit, and that might bring down your countable earned income below that substantial gainful activity amount of $1,040. So there are ways, even though you might be earning over substantial gainful activity, by using these work activities to manage and maintain your benefits. One of the bigger pieces that I really like within the Social Security system is that once you've gone through your 36 months of your extended period of eligibility, there are no more protections. So the very first month that you earn over $1,040 after you've worked through your trial work period and your extended period of eligibility, you can be terminated from eligibility. Most likely you will be. You're not going to be found eligible for your disability benefits any longer. Social Security has put a work incentive in place for that as well, called the expedited reinstatement. And basically what the expedited reinstatement is that if you have to stop or drastically reduce your employment because of your disability within 5 years of losing your cash benefits, your benefits may be reinstated without a new application. Basically what this is, it's almost, I always look at it as more of like a fast-track application. You don't have to go back and jump through all those initial hoops that you had to jump through to become eligible. What you need to do is you would need to show updated medical information, most recent, and really show that the reason why you had to cut back or stop working is based on the disability. And then they would find you then presumably eligible again, and your benefits would start back up again. So there are ways that you are able to work, manage your benefits. Once you are terminated from benefits, so once you've gone through your 36 months, again, your Medicare is going to stay with you. So even if you go through your trial work period, your extended period of eligibility, you're then terminated from benefits, as long as you're paying your premium for your Part B, for your Medicare, your medical insurance will stay with you for up to 5 years past that time frame.
We need
so
to
there are. Okay, I'm just about done.
Okay,
so
great.
You just need to. Yeah, that's perfect. Good timing. So yeah, there are ways that you can maintain it. my final thought is you do need to report your income. You must report your income every month to Social Security. Don't wait for them to contact you. You really want to be very proactive with that. And before you begin to work, you need to be very clear about what benefits you are receiving. Is it SSI, SSDI, or both? Are you receiving Medicare, Medicaid, or both? Any housing support, food stamps? You want to think about all of those things. And it's always a good idea to discuss all of this with a benefits counselor in your state. Most states have benefits counseling programs either through Voc Rehab or on staff at community rehab programs, or you can always email or call me. Work income or any income can have a direct impact on the entitlements, but if they're managed correctly, then it's not as scary as it seems. It really can happen, and it's very manageable.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for all that. That was really great. I know we're going to have a lot of questions afterwards.
It's very confusing.
It is confusing, but that was a really good explanation, and I really appreciated it. Okay, so our next speaker is Paula Rubin, VAA. I said that right, is a certified vocational evaluator and president of Employment Options, Inc., which is a national and entirely virtual Social Security Ticket to Work employment network. Now, Paula has provided job placement services for over 25 years to diverse disability populations, including injured workers, veterans, VR, addicts, seniors, and Social Security recipients. She's now joined by a staff of 15. She's an accomplished author of Disabilities, Different Abilities, A New Perspective for Job Hunters, and Employment Options, The Ultimate Resource for Job Seekers with Disabilities and Other Challenges. Employment Options specializes in work-from-home jobs, and today Paula is going to talk to us about her company and the opportunities available. Welcome, Paula.
Well, hi. Thank you very much. For those who aren't familiar, I'm going to take just a couple of minutes to talk about the Social Security Ticket to Work program. And what this is it's a program designed to help people, beneficiaries, return to work. We're sort of an alternative to vocational rehabilitation. Each employment network might be a little unique in its focus. But in general, a Ticket to Work employment network, there's choices. There's a bunch of us around, and different employment networks work better for different people. And so it's great that people now have a choice. It's a voluntary program. If you think you want to try to return to work, it doesn't cost you anything. And so the trick is to try to find the employment network that's best suited for your needs. There are some advantages to when you try to go back to work to try to work through an employment network. Once you've assigned your ticket to an employment network, you no longer get medical reviews, which is a big benefit. So if you went back to work and you didn't assign your ticket or you weren't with Voc Rehab, then you might be working and then all of a sudden you got your medical review record and you could have problems. But the primary purpose of the Ticket to Work program is to help people who are well enough return to full-time employment eventually. But it coincides completely with the Social Security program of the nine trial months and all of that. You get all of that through, assigning your ticket and when you go back to work. And so I just kind of wanted to give a little bit of an overview for people who weren't familiar with it. That said, not everybody knows when they contact an employment network whether or not they're going to be able to work full-time or maybe they just want to work part-time and see if eventually they can work themselves up to full-time. But the goal of the program is to help you eventually return to full-time employment. Not everybody can. So what we do is basically our job is job placement and retention. First, we have a three-step process that we use with every new ticket holder that we take on. Everybody gets a copy of my book that I wrote because people were their own worst enemies when they were job hunting, and a lot of people would want to tell everything to everybody, and you know, the book kind of explains your rights. It's a quick assessment for us to get to know you and to make sure that we're working together with you to meet your values and your goals. Then we'll refer you to appropriate employers, and all the other things that you're pretty familiar with will follow. We actually, with our work-at-home employers, it's really wonderful because we've got a great working relationship with them. And each one of our, many of our employers will track our applicants. So if you apply to one of the work-at-home companies, we can say to them, hey, we just referred Nancy and wanted to get some, you know, follow-up on where she's at. And sometimes people's applications get lost. Sometimes they're denied for silly reasons, like they checked a box that they shouldn't have checked. Sometimes they didn't do well on the computer portion of the testing, or sometimes they didn't do well in the interview. So anyhow, we get feedback, which is really helpful, because that way when we're working with an individual, we can look at the feedback and adjust our goals and expectations and maybe work on those problems that kept them from getting that one job and help them get another job. When you do go back to work, we'll help you with the transition period. It's, you know, it's different. You, when you haven't been working, then all of a sudden you're working and you've got to try to balance everything, and so we're there for you there. If there's accommodations, we try to help you with accommodations, and we do have a certified work incentive benefit counselor on staff that can help you with your benefit questions. So that's really, really good. And she does also, she'll track trial work periods. So if you know you're not going to be well enough to lose your benefits, that once you get near that 9 months, we will let you know. We don't want you having any surprises. You know, we may need more information. There's things that, you can ask Social Security to get a record to make sure that you haven't used up any of your trial work months. That might be something just to add into the benefit portion, because sometimes people think they haven't used up any of their months, and then they start working, we find out, and that's where the surprises come. So it's always good to get information. Now, the type of work-from-home jobs that we have are W-2 positions primarily, and these jobs have set hours and hourly pay, and you will be, you know, the taxes are taken out, just like if you were working somewhere else. We're seeing a lot of call center jobs working for, like, AT&T and answering, or for cable companies, or for the flower companies when they're hiring. Those are seasonal jobs. Or we're seeing some virtual nursing type of positions, tech support positions. I'm having problems with my iPhone kind of jobs. Now, our company doesn't then there's a 1099 jobs, and that's more of a self-employment type of thing, where you're going to see a lot of times medical transcriptionist or surveys or data entry. And the difference is that you pay your own taxes, and there aren't generally no set hours. So with the types of jobs we find primarily, it's kind of like you're in a call center, but your call center could be your bedroom. The calls come in through your computer. You answer the phone on your computer, and then you hang up, and the next phone call dings in your computer, and you stay very busy. It's all of the jobs that we have are the call center, except for the nursing, but all of the jobs that we help people find right now are mostly, I wouldn't say all call center. We have the tech support, and we're seeing more and more of the programming jobs and some of the higher level tech support jobs out there. We're always trying to get a handle on that and help people to get even better jobs. And And so, you know, one of the big considerations that you should think about whether or not that this is for you is, can you, let's go to the work from home minimum qualifications. Were you legally able to work in U.S., high school diploma or GED, this we see with every one of them. You have to be good on the phone. Now, if you're having problems because of your disability with your voice, it could be a problem in these jobs. It's these are entirely virtual jobs, and that's how you're communicating. And that's one of the essential functions of the job. So it's kind of hard to get around that. And if you are having communication issues verbally, then you might be better off with one of the 1099 jobs and not necessarily go through an employment network. And then these jobs, they have set schedules. That's the toughest part for a lot of people. You know, some people have good days and some people have bad days. Well, I'm sorry, you know, your bad days, you're still scheduled. And if you can't maintain a set schedule, then you know, it could be difficult for you. A lot of these jobs require weekends, and a lot of the jobs we have, and when I say the jobs we have, they're also the jobs that you're seeing on the internet. They have full-time training hours. The reason for that is that it just takes, you know, 2 or 3 weeks to train someone to learn how to take calls for, you know, DirecTV. You know, it just takes that long for them to train you so you're equipped to handle the calls that come in. And if they were going to try to do that part-time, what they tell us is, you know, we just can't keep somebody in training for 6 weeks. So that's kind of where we're – I have, you know, every once in a while I get an employer that has some part-time training for the part-time jobs, because we do get both part-time and full-time jobs. But unfortunately, most of the employers – do have full-time training hours, so that's a consideration. You already have to have a computer or laptop, and none of the companies allow Macs. You need a minimum processor speed of 1 gigahertz to 1.5 gigahertz computer, and you need a minimum of 1 gig of RAM. The reason being is what happens is these companies, once you're hired, will send you a CD, and you'll install the CD on your computer, which connects you with their virtual software, which connects you to their system. And if you don't have enough RAM or enough gigahertz processor, then you're not going to connect. Now, we do have a couple of jobs where you're not actually installing something on your computer, which overtakes your computer. Some of them are now working totally in the cloud, but you still have to have a computer that's fast enough to connect to the cloud. You have to have high-speed internet, no satellite, that won't work, no through the telephone, some of those boxes, I forget what you call them, has to be high-speed internet or DSL, cable or DSL. You have to have the ability to work independently. You know, you are by yourself and you have a caller on the other line. You need a quiet, noise-free home space. You know, you're taking care of kids, you're taking care of grandma. Well, that's fine and dandy, but you're going to need to be in another room where you're not, where you, you know, the employers don't have a lot of tolerance for, well, I'm calling about my cell phone bill, and this dog starts barking, and the kids start crying. Well, that's not very professional, so that's not what the image the employers want to project. You shouldn't be able to tell that the person's working from their home if they're on the call with you, their customer. Again, the clear speaking voice, you must type 25 words per minute. You know, all of our employers require that. And so, you know, we'd love to accommodate it, but one of the reasons why they can't accommodate it is because you're on the phone, you're taking information, you're typing and talking. You may need to go from one browser window to the next browser window, and you've got to be able to keep up. And if you're having trouble physically keyboarding that much, well, you may have trouble with the job. You need a minimum of 6 months customer service experience, or if for the medical jobs, we need a current state license. And we do have a lot of job openings. There are all these jobs, a lot of these jobs were exported to the Philippines and to India, and a lot of these jobs have come back to the United States. And the employers really like hiring people with disabilities because they, you know, one, they like the idea of being able to help someone, and two, a lot of times a person with a disability just really physically can't work outside of the house. So it's you're dependable that way. You know, the soccer moms, well, you've got a soccer, you know, you got to take the kid to the soccer game, and that comes before work, and that's why you want to work at home. And they didn't really work out as well as they thought they would. So they actually really, really like hiring the folks that we recommend. And about 50% of the people that we send do get hired. So that's pretty awesome. And you know, I've kind of told you some of the strictness of the job, but it really is a great job for the right person. Let's see. So, you know, you might have somebody on the line that's having problems with their TV, or there might be somebody on the line that wants to order some more services. They're all incoming, inbound calls. And I'm mostly talking about the call center jobs. The RN jobs are more quality assurance, could be case management, could be telephone triage. I'm seeing some other professional-level jobs out there. You know, this work from home is still fairly in its infancy, and I'm starting to see, you know, mortgage processing types of jobs, insurance agent jobs. So I'm starting to see some different types of jobs that we're pursuing as well. So don't be totally discouraged if you don't quite have the requirements for these jobs. And you may want to check our job board periodically to see what else we've got that we're able to, you know, nab and share with you guys. Let's see.
We've got about 2 minutes.
Right. So basically, we're just about wrapped up. I did pretty good. Basically, if you want to see more jobs and you want to apply, we require all the work-from-home applicants to apply through the website. We are testing your computer skills. That's part of our assessment, so we require that. You must currently be receiving SSI or SSDI to qualify for our program. The frequent questions, again, we're unable to help due to our funding, to help with retraining or buy computers. We can't help you with your own business. We're not able to accommodate JAWS or Zoom Tech. Again, their computer systems aren't able to do that. You know, we love it, and I'm working with them. I'm begging them, come on, please. But we're working on it and hope to see some chat-only jobs. If you don't qualify and you still need help, you can email help@myemploymentoptions.com. You know, we have a lot of resources there to link you up to legitimate companies and or other agencies that might be able to help you. We are having a virtual job fair on March 7th, and that's open to everyone. So if you want to actually come and just talk to some of the chat with some of the employers there, we're going to have a fairly good turnout of employers, and you can get a better idea of what's there. I think I'm going to actually have a couple of 1099 employers there too, if that's what you're looking for. We want to be available to the community, and we wish we could help everybody. But as you can see, what we do is pretty specific. But it when it's a good match for you, it's a wonderful thing. It, you know, it really helps a lot of people. We've gotten a lot of people back to work. We've got over 400 people back to work last year, so I'm really proud of that.
That's great. That's great, Paula. Well, on that note, we did run over a little bit than we planned. We want to make sure we give everybody, well, as many people as possible, a chance to get their questions answered. So we're going to run over by 5 minutes. I'm just letting people know that. We're going to do the call till 8:05, and then we'll do the survey at that point. So, Dawn, I think we're ready to start taking some questions.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Okay. Our first question comes from Chris. Chris, go ahead.
What is Paula's website one more time?
It's myemploymentoptions.com.
Our next question comes from Marsha. Marsha, please go ahead.
Okay, I was just getting ready to ask the same thing.
Okay, so it's a good question.
Our next question comes from William. William, please go ahead.
You have just answered the same question I want to ask.
Wow, great.
Okay. Next question.
Okay. Our next question comes from Lydia.
Hi. I wanted to find out. I do a lot of crafting at home, and I know it doesn't bring in a lot of income, but how to be self-employed, how do I go about getting more information on how that would work for me, taxes-wise and things like that? I'm not sure if I explained it right. Sorry.
I think I'll jump in on this one. This is Barbara from the New York City chapter. If at the end of the call we're going to give our contact information, Stephen, Christina, and I, and if you contact one of us, we can give you some resources for that kind of thing. There is a website called Etsy that you can actually sell handcrafted items, and there are some resources that we can send you about starting your own business and some of the things you may need to consider. I know you're concerned about the financial end of it. You may need to get some advice from the small business community, and we have those resources as well for you to check in on. Does anybody else have anything to chime in on that?
Nope, I think that you covered it. Thank you.
Okay, Dawn, next question, please.
Our next question comes from Sandra.
Hi, just curious to know if is the training on any of these things paid, or is it something that you just, jump in and go through the training?
No, great question. It is all paid training, and one thing I did neglect to say, the jobs pay anywhere from, at the lowest we have is $8.50, but they tend to range in around the $9 an hour range for work from home call center. Of course, the nursing pays a lot better, but it's not as high as we would like. But all the training is paid, and you get benefits. They have 401ks and everything. I mean, it's just like a real job. It's like working in a real call center. They've got all the benefits. So it can be really great.
Okay, great. Next question.
Our next question comes from Kathy. Kathy, your line's open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Oftentimes states have associated resources for people on disability. If you're on SSDI and accessing not only the federal but state resources, if you then start to work, and you are in that the second period, the longer period, 36 months.
Right, the 36 months.
Do you lose all of your access to those things? And then same question, basically, when you go back to working full-time, but you're in that five-year period where you end up relapsing and having to go back on SSDI, during that period of time, do you lose access to all those resources?
That's a really good question. Each state has their different rules for any of those state-supported programs. And so you really want to look at each state differently. Medicaid, if you're looking at Medicaid, Medicaid is generally looked at through earned income and your eligibility to Social Security disability. But it can have. That's why I always want to recommend that before you start working, you want to really take a look at every benefit that you're receiving. So not only the federal benefits, but you really want to be aware of your state benefits that you're receiving. Now, if for any reason you do start working and you're earning income and you're earning over a certain amount, you go through your 36 months and then you're terminated. And then you go through an expedited reinstatement. In your reinstatement, then all of those benefits that you may have lost by working and earning income then become available to you again. But you really need to check on the state level of what each one of those benefit rules are and what those thresholds are.
Great, thank you. Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Allison. Please go ahead.
Hi. Can you just go over the information about that virtual job fair again?
It's March 7th, and you can register on our website, myemploymentoptions.com. It's going to go from 10 to 5.
Our next question is from Cindy. Cindy, please go ahead.
And to the last caller, just ask the same question I had, so thank you.
Next question from Ida.
Hi. The two questions that were asked have been answered. Thank you.
Okay. Our next question comes from Deborah.
Hi. My question is, you referred to jobs as W-2 and as 1099. So I'm not sure what do you mean by. I'm looking at the handouts. I didn't have time to really read them carefully. But what do you mean by those type of jobs?
Well, a W-2 position is like when you're working for an employer and they're taking out taxes. And a 1099 position is like a self-employment when you're your own boss. And the IRS sort of defines that by the hours. If you're working set hours, then it's usually a W-2 position. And if you're working like you're doing your crafts or then that would be like a 1099 where you're keeping your own taxes and the employer's not taking any taxes out.
Now, if I would, with Social Security, when you're talking about substantial gainful activity and that 1,040, Social Security looks at a 1099. An individual that is on a 1099 or a contractor, they're looking at the net amount after taxes. If you're a W-2 employee and employer is taking out taxes, Social Security looks at gross, not net. So they look at that pre-income tax amount that you're earning.
Our next question comes from Susan. Susan, please go ahead.
Hi. No, I was just wondering, for the call center jobs, they want 6 months of experience. Is there any way to get that kind of experience if you don't have it?
Well, you don't have to have call center experience. You have to have customer service experience. And if you've been a waitress or you've worked retail, even fast foods, you know, that some of that can qualify you. If you don't have any kind of call center background at all, or any kind of customer service background. I don't know.
My retail
you gotta have
probably like 25 years old, so
that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we you know, you can always fill an application out with us, and we can assess that. You know, we might see some customer service background that you're not seeing, you know, sometimes, or they don't really worry so much about when it was. That's the good thing about our employers. They're really good about gaps of employment. They're really lenient about that. They just want to make sure you've got the skills and abilities to do the job.
Would they accept, like, volunteer-type things, like working for the 4-H club?
What were you doing?
Well, I mean, you know, as a leader of the club and helping the kids to do things and volunteer.
That's not customer service. I mean, it's customer service is working with customers. So I doubt that they would accept that.
If you had some type of volunteer work, I would guess, where you were doing customer service, so for example, if you were working at the information desk at a museum and you had to handle customer questions and et cetera, that might relate in terms of volunteer work, I would guess. Right, Paula?
Right. Yeah, that might help.
Okay.
Our next question. Our next question comes from Marcel.
Yes, I'd like to, if you could talk more about starting your own business, because that's kind of what I'd like to do. You know, I just got this computer, and I'd like to perhaps help people working in visual field. And I know it's not going to earn a lot of money at the beginning, but I certainly wouldn't want to be in trouble. I mean, if I'm not going to be earning a lot of money, am I going to be in trouble with the Social Security?
No.
I mean, to start up my own business, you know, I could tell people that, you know.
Well, no, not at all. It really depends on how much you're earning net. So you're going to have your it's going to look at your net amount. So it taxes. Social Security really looks very favorably on self-employment and starting your own business. So there are a lot of additional incentives. Also within your state, if you're looking for additional funding, there are individual development accounts that are available. There's also something through Social Security called the Plan to Achieve Self-Support that allows you to set money aside in order to start a business or to achieve an occupational objective. So it's just in how you report it, and you really want to work very closely with Social Security in that reporting piece of it.
Thank you. Next question.
Our next question comes from Diane.
Hello.
Yes, Diane, please go ahead.
Hello, this is Diane.
Yes,
can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My question is, when the young lady was talking about the computers and the type of computers and the internet you needed to have, I thought I heard her say something about you can't have a Mac computer. Maybe I misunderstood.
No, you can't have a Mac computer. They're not compatible. The employer systems are not compatible with Macintosh.
Our next question comes from Kevin.
Hello. I'm an engineer by training. I have a master's in electrical engineering, primarily computers. The jobs we've been talking about seem to be more customer service jobs. I was wondering if there are any kinds of jobs I could do.
Well, it's difficult to say without looking at your resume. I'm just starting to see, you know, some of the professional level jobs out there, but they're still few and far between. So I want to be encouraging. That I think we'll see more as the years go along. But right now, mostly what I'm seeing still is the tech support, computer tech support, and not more of the professional level like you're talking about.
I think we have time for one more question.
Okay. Our last question comes from Kimberly. Kimberly, please go ahead.
Yes. Right now I receive Social Security, and I receive money from my long-term, from my job. So I'm wondering if, because I truly, truly want to work, but I'm wondering if the funds that I'm receiving now, will that affect my long-term from my job?
That's a really good question. If it's directly from your job and it's not state supported, then the money that you're receiving from disability should not affect the money that you're getting from your long-term disability. But it's certainly something that you want to look into with
mm-hmm.
your employer to find out what those rules are.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, if it's employer sponsored, there isn't an issue, but you want to be very careful with that. So you do want to look into the specific rules for that long-term disability policy. Now, when it comes to working, though, again, there could be very specific working rules that go with that long-term disability policy. I've seen some folks that have long-term disability, and it's very much defined within the policy of how many hours that individual can work, and anything over that certain amount of hours, it's looked at full-time, and then that long-term disability can be in jeopardy. So you want to look at those individual pieces to that long-term policy to find out what the working rules are as well.
That's a great response. Thank you. Well, it's about 8:05, so we've kept everyone on the phone a little longer than we anticipated, but I'm going to give out my contact information, and then Steve and Christina can give theirs. You can reach me at B as in Barbara, M as in Mary, C, K-E-O-N, that's B. McKeon, at msnyc.org. My telephone number is 212-453-3218. Steve?
Sure. My contact information is steve.nissen, it's N as in Nancy, I-S-S-E-N, at nmss.org. Phone number is 202-296-5363.
Christina?
Hi, my contact information is Christina with a C-H dot Forster, and that's F-O-R-S-T-E-R at nmss.org, and the phone number is 215-271-1500.
And if you contact any one of us, if you didn't get your question answered, please, I encourage you to contact us so we can get the answer for you. And we're happy to do that. And on that note, Dawn, if you could start the survey, if people would just please hang on just a few more minutes. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the polling portion of our call. The first question is, are you currently working? Press 1 for yes or 2 for no. Again, are you currently working? 1 for yes, 2 for no. Please hold while the results come in. Our next question. How would you rate the speakers? 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor? Again, how would you rate the speakers? 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, 4 for poor. Please hold while results come in. Next question. How would you rate the content of the program? 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor? Again, how would you rate the content of the program? 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor? Please hold while results come in. Our next question. As a result of this teleconference, I have a better understanding of how much I can learn before I lose my benefits, or how much I can earn before I lose my benefits. 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3 for disagree. Again, as a result of this teleconference, I have a better understanding of how much I can earn before I lose my benefits. Please hold while the results come in. Next question. As a result of this teleconference, I have a better understanding of the different work incentives that Social Security offers if I want to try and work. Press 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3 for disagree. Again, as a result of this teleconference, I have a better understanding of the different work incentives that Social Security offers if I want to try and work. Please hold while the results come in. Last question. As a result of this teleconference, I am aware of the various work-from-home opportunities that are available with my employment options. 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree somewhat, 3 for disagree. Again, as a result of this teleconference, I am aware of the various work-from-home opportunities that are available with my employment options. 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree somewhat, 3 for disagree. Please hold while results come in. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the polling portion of the call. You may all disconnect.